ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Israel continues to strike Gaza in retaliation for Saturday's attacks on Israel. There's also fighting ongoing in Israel, where the Israeli military is trying to clear Hamas militants out of towns they occupied during Saturday's attack. ABC's James Longman has the latest from Tel Aviv.
Hostage situations are also ongoing inside Israel, but also inside Gaza. Hamas is claiming to have taken dozens of people hostage. Again, awful images showing young children, women, the elderly being transported on cars or on motorbikes over into Gaza. And so working out just how to respond for the Israelis now is a top priority.
President Biden at the White House reaffirmed U.S. support for Israel. At least 2,000 people are dead in Afghanistan after a major earthquake, and there was no winner in the Powerball jackpot. This is ABC News. A Navy sailor is among the four people arrested in connection with the disappearance of a mother and her infant daughter in Jamaica.
The U.S. Navy acknowledging the arrest in Jamaica of culinary specialist seaman Leota Bradshaw on kidnapping and conspiracy to commit murder charges. Jamaica's Deputy Commissioner of Police Fitz Bailey.
This investigation has morphed into a very complex case of kidnapping and conspiracy.
Bradshaw and three others were arrested this week in connection to the disappearance of a mother and her 10-month-old daughter, first reported missing on September 9th. In a statement, the U.S. Navy says it's fully cooperating with appropriate investigative and law enforcement authorities. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Vermont State Police asking public businesses and hunters near Vermont State University in Castleton to check surveillance video after retired Dean and Professor Honoree Fleming was found shot to death on a rail trail last week. State Police say a possible suspect identified as 5'10" white male should be considered armed and dangerous. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Wisconsin's population is getting older. The AARP ranks Wisconsin 15th of the nation for long-term care services, but advocates see room for improvement. Mike Moan reports.
Jim Flaherty with AARP Wisconsin agrees the state has done a better job in some areas, such as increasing the number of aging and disability resource centers. But he says there still isn't enough support to help older residents stay in their homes and receiving care in that setting. He warns that the state is going to have a hard time keeping up.
Wisconsin is getting older as a state, and the need for more home healthcare workers and facility-trained healthcare workers is only going to increase.
The national report offers recommendations, including some that have been suggested for years, such as providing more financial support to unpaid family caregivers. Officials say policies like tax credits can help reduce cost burdens. States, counties, and cities also are encouraged to develop their own innovative aging plans that can help communities better manage long-term care needs. And while advocates prefer to help older residents remain in their homes, they say nursing homes continue to grapple with staffing shortages. Flaherty says low wages are a big factor.
Wisconsin could really benefit from some additional resources provided by the state to increase the pay for some of the workers in these facilities. You know, the pay is below level of a lot of other jobs that these folks can take.
The report says in Wisconsin, nursing home wages are more than $1.50 an hour lower than other entry-level jobs. Nationally, more than a half of staff in nursing homes leave their jobs within a year. However, the turnover rate is better in Wisconsin. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Red Delicious, Honeycrisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
And Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated. Educators talking education.
Ah, welcome to Busted Pencils. Fully let it education talk. Educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci, I'm not sure.
Hey.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
I'm back, man. Worried. I mean,
you were having some mic trouble. So, you know, I don't know. It's the state of Washington. Maybe you didn't pull, you know, the cord between the coffee cans tight enough.
Oh, man. You know, something over here. I always have a backup plan in place, and the soundboard seems to be having some trouble. So we just really quickly rewired things, and we're at it. You know, I'm always ready to go, Tim.
Go. We had a nice break last week. A couple, you know, things going on, but this week, oh, I was waiting for this. In fact,
this is,
you know, awesome. Our friend, you know, from Educators Amplified, Joanna Rosato, just does some work on the side with, you know, another really important person, and they put out a piece in Education Week. She sent it to me and went, "What do you think?" And I went, "Oh my God." I'm not allowed to say some of the things that I actually typed back to her, because I was like, it was powerful stuff. In fact, Teacher Power Education Week, Dr. Michael Fullen, Joanna Rosato, welcome to Busted Pencils. Before we get talking, though, I got to read the beginning, quote, directly so that people can get the setup here. And here we go. Quote, "The current system," keep that word in mind, people, "system. The current system of education does not work for the majority of students. The situation is worsening, battered by the pandemic that exposed the inner weaknesses of a structure and a culture that does not support well-being and learning in the world in which we live. Many teachers are leaving the profession or not showing up in the first place. Those teachers that remain are retreating to the one thing they can partially control, surviving as best they can behind the classroom door." Welcome to Busted Pencils again, Dr. Michael Fullen, Joanna Rosato, Educators Amplified. Dr. Fullen, where did you find this Joanna Rosato? Because she snuck around and grabbed me, because she is like our favorite person.
She's become my favorite person, too. I live in Toronto, and I work all over the world, but quite a lot in California, for example. And out of the blue, I guess 2.5 years ago, she sent me a note saying, "I just read your work on what we call the drivers, what's going to change the system." And she said, "It resonates with me." And so I always link to people who are in doing the work, because they have the most insights. And Joanna does the work in a way that doesn't accept the system as it is, isn't like a storming rebel, although I'm sure you are sometimes, but really built her own system as she did within her sub-school. And then we started to work together and had common ground. So my work is very well grounded in California, for example, and other places we work. So I always look for practitioners who know more than I do.
Well, and there she is, Joanna. Yep. How are you? How about that for compliments from Dr. Michael Fullen?
So nice. So nice. Yeah. Hi. Great to be back on the show.
Well, so, okay, so let's get into it, right? I mean, just for people, please check out, we'll put some more links up there and do some promotions of Dr. Fullen's websites, Deep Learning, Leadership. But system seems to really be at the heart Dr. Fullan, of the work you're talking about, system change, systemics. Can you just give a brief kind of like an overview of saying, when you say the system is something we need to change, what does that mean to you? Somebody who's listening, my neighbor who's saying, I think system change is what's needed. I just don't know how to do it. Give us a little 101 on systems.
That's hard to do in a few minutes, but the short version is the work that we do is heavily grounded from the classroom upward to the policy, not the other way around. Mm. So I'd say, you know, build the bottom, strengthen the middle, which is the district, and intrigue the top. So we know that for the vast majority of students, really something like 80%, they're either alienated or bored. And this was the case before COVID. And so it's even worse now because of the additional psychological pressures and things that people can't really handle anyways. And we find that teachers, there's about four or five things that if they happen together, it's when they happen together that the system changes. There's hardly any system change, although I would say that our work in Anaheim Unified or Anaheim Union High School District with about 20 schools, it's highly successful. We write about it. It's got the system quality because the pieces are connected to each other, the student to the teachers, teacher to the principal, principal to the district. That rarely happens, as Joanna knows quite well from her local work.
Yeah, Joanna, comment there.
Well, I was just thinking again how you bring up the word system, and that again was something that Michael and I came together over because his deep understanding of systems, I would always say, I'm like, Michael, we could have all the best ideas in the world, but in this current system, they don't live, they don't thrive, they're temporary. And so that was something that we really came together on and want to help people see that it's not necessarily going to be one individual classroom at a time, which is how that policy down to the classroom system works.
Well, and so that, you know, yeah, so there it is, the system there. And you point this out for the show, though, going back to the piece in Education Week, teacher powers. What I really love about this piece here is the centering of teachers and putting forward this idea that really does. And I say at this moment, Joanna knows this, I have been, teachers are demoralized. They're leaving the classroom. And people say they're quitting. No, they're walking away from a job they're not allowed to do anymore. The agency to be that person who lifts the spirit, to do something deeply for the community, the system doesn't allow them to do that, and they walk away. You two, though, in here say, but they could be kind of centered. Is centering the right word here, Michael?
Well, first, we did an op-ed about a year ago that was called Who's Abandoning Whom? Is the system abandoning teachers, or is it the other way around? Well, we answered our own question because we also said, well, let's look at the teachers who are staying. What makes them stay? And always what makes them stay is working with other teachers and being close to their students. I think to a certain extent, teachers are not taking the risk to work with other teachers because it hasn't been encouraged. So that's a problem of initiative. But what we have found and know that, again, I go to Anaheim because it's very clear, they have developed a system where the students are developing what they call ability to be good in society and good for society. So they're actually working with the help of principals. They're making changes. They're having success. And teachers don't realize they could have more success. Certainly the hierarchy doesn't.
Joanna, follow up.
Well, and you know, for me, it always starts with just like a thought where, and that is, you know, Michael and I talk regularly, and we was just kind of saying the whole, like, let's put our money where our mouth is. Everybody says teachers are so important, but we don't have a system that actually has ever centered them. And then, you know, that I am a passionate advocate for teachers. And I believe that teachers have the gold that is needed to really move things along, and that they're an asset and a resource. We still do, even though we have a shortage and an exodus, there are still mainly highly qualified, credentialed teachers in our schools, and we should be using that resource as part of this system change.
So we're at the system change, and I again go back to the piece because I underlined this, and quote, the old system and its drivers for change have failed time and time again. The external levers, such as high stakes testing intended to change the system, have not worked. I mean, that's Joanna, right? How long have you and I talked about going? It's like the high stakes, and some people think this is an oversimplification, but it's like the high stakes mandated you will learn all of this stuff because I said so doesn't work. Michael, I see you nodding there on that. Is, I mean, it seemed like that one seems very, very simple. I remember this was, you know, 2010, 2011, Joanna, when I entered the opt-out movement because I was watching my son, who was then in fifth grade, just literally, you know, going, the teachers were saying, Tim, we can't, they were, this is what, we can't really teach him and engage him in learning because that's not on the test. And I went, does anybody recognize how sick of a system it is when you're literally telling parents and kids, we can't teach him to learn because that's not on the test? Michael.
Well, there's two things. One is you can't mandate what matters. What really matters is the motivation of students plunging into the deeper goals of problem-solving, thinking, working with others, making a difference. And they're not turned on by doing well on a given test, studying hard and do it, because it's irrelevant to the immediacy of what they need. So, and people haven't been able to come up with an alternative. That's the problem. They have the test. They keep going back to the test. It doesn't work. The different goals that we call it the six C's. It's more like citizenship, collaboration, communication, creativity. It's not doing just well on a test. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that, but they don't have the alternative. That's the problem.
Johnny, right. Jump in there.
Well, I agree with that. And I think it's important to clarify and bring it back to the piece that the alternative isn't put into place by those in power. And what I mean by that is maybe like districts or state systems. There are teachers and groups of students who have found success in alternative and have evidence of that. And this is one of the exciting things of these, you know, these stories that we're sharing, and also the energy that's coming off both the piece that both of you share, is that I get excited about not just putting this on teachers, but really centering the collaborative work, the messy work between teachers and their students. Because one of the biggest learning moments coming out of the COVID era and the largest social uprising of all of our lifetimes is the young people saying school's not really working the way it's been working, and this is an opportunity for us to do something radically different. And we saw that in the largest social uprising of our lifetime. And so now here we're back in these situations where, you know, things aren't working. The standardized tests, we've known they've not been working. But then we have these really exciting collaborative efforts from teachers and students in their classrooms, communities, alternative settings. And it's, by and large, it has to be different. So those that are left have to do things differently or fail. And they're doing them differently.
They're doing them a lot differently. In fact, you know what you're hinting at, and again, our guest tonight, Dr. Michael Full and Joanna Rosato, their piece about teacher power in Education Week, culture. What about this culture? We talked about systems. We're going to talk about culture. Busted pencils, fully leaded, back after the break.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Folks, I tell you this much, the Kripescast is just the butter on my cheese.
When it came time, like, oh, I'm going to pursue comedy. At the time, it was like, well, it was New York into Los Angeles. I'm like, I knew more people in New York. I knew you'd get funnier in New York and there's more stage time. I'm like, I'm going to LA. Like, if my dreams are going to come crashing down, I'd rather have them come crashing down on the beach.
Kripescast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
That's the way we love it every Tuesday night. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Oh, Rise Against, we love your intro music because it always sets us up. Educated Educators Talking Education, our guest Dr. Michael Full and Joanna Rosato, their piece in Education Week talking about teacher power. We talked about systems. We're going to go into culture, but we have a caller, and we want to get to that caller always for the first time. L.A. Tom, you are out there. Tom, what's happening, my friend?
Hey, first off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. What I'd like to say is that why are we not following the lead of someone like Iceland, who is actually in the same position that we were at, where they were the lowest in terms of education in the world, and now they're like number one. I was watching Where to Invade Next, Michael Moore's documentary.
Yeah, Tom, I think you're talking about Finland, though, right?
I'm sorry, Finland. Yes.
I just want to make sure. I knew you were talking about Finland.
Yeah. Why are we not taking something that's working in other places? I'm sure it has something to do with money in politics or money in, you know, all of that in schools and in terms of paid, which is maybe the administrators and not the teachers. I don't know. All I know is. It's been done in a place like Finland where they were the worst and now they're the best. And they got rid of the standardized testing. They got rid of those different things, which made it so the actual culture and systems seem like they're really working.
Tom, and thank you for that, because actually too, as much as Finland, Michael, actually, too, you were saying there are places in California, in Canada, that are talking about, not just talking about, implementing system change to affect culture. I don't know if you wanted to just respond to Tom, and then we'll dig into that culture.
Yeah, let's do that. Finland, we know Finland because we work in a lot of different countries. And the irony is, and Linda Darling-Hammond, who's head of the school board and great leader in change in California at the policy level, she said you can't fire your way to Finland. That's the way she put it. Like, you can't just fire your teachers. But it's actually worse than that, because Finland is a small country, and they themselves will say they're not as good as people think we are. So I think we can learn from others, but the culture is how teachers work together. And I have to say that we've had pockets of that over the last 20 years, but it's never stuck, and it's more unstuck now because teachers don't feel it's possible or worth working with others. So you're really stuck. Culture is about trusted relationships between and among people, and you don't have that now. So you can't even get to first base.
Okay, so then if to affect system change, we have to change the culture. Is it that's, and then, okay. And so Joanna, you exist in that culture all the time. And we've talked about it on Educators Amplified on Busted Pencils, though. Okay, so tell me about what you're going to do to fix the culture.
Well, we propose teachers working in an absolutely different way that will kind of come about by flattening the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. Right now, I see the hierarchy, you know, is something that really hamstrings us. Instead of us all being looked at as, you know, I'm not saying nobody should, you know, the position shouldn't exist, but that it should be flattened. You know, mm-hmm. I always say it's a wheel that should be rolling through instead of like a pyramid that something like maybe trickles down to the bottom. And so thinking about how teachers' work is scheduled, how their expertise is actually really gathered and used. Michael, you looked like you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, a little bit, because the interesting thing is, and I published a book a few months ago called The Principal 2.0, mm-hmm. and it's based on the finding using certain principals who happen to be exceptions, that the principal's job is to develop the local system, the relationships, the flattened hierarchy at work. And we have examples of that. The problem is the hierarchy doesn't let their principals or cultivate their principals to work that way to change the culture. There are exceptions, and that's what we're pushing for. But the system doesn't suppresses the capacity and doesn't develop it that would be required to do this, because they believe that test scores are more concrete, which is a false assumption. So it's really just all haywire. And it's getting worse because people are running out of hope and they're running out of energy.
Well, that, I mean, and that's the piece too, to kind of bring this back, is to recognize, and again, before COVID, you know, I 2010, my son Luke was in fifth grade, right? Before that, you know, it's 1983, we talked about this, Michael, A Nation at Risk, it kind of put this in place. In 1983, I was the cause of the nation at risk. I accept that. I'm sorry that my test scores in 1983 were so bad. You know, I've taken ownership for that. And I've been trying. But that idea, though, as you said, is the simplicity of saying test scores go up, therefore learning occurred, therefore teachers are good, therefore principals are good. Is it that system's just so neat and so nice, we just can't let it go?
It's not that, because the test scores aren't going up. They haven't gone up since 1980. So it's a false interpretation to say that because we have testing, it goes up. President Bush signed that No Child Left Behind in 2002. Mm-hmm. Which was heavily test-based.
Right.
And since then, the decline has been incessant, because tests are not the motivation to learn. Mm-hmm. It's motivation to learn is solving problems, making a difference in society, working with other people to do that. There's so many more things. We call it the shared humanity solution. Mm. And people are just not working on that. And so they're stuck in a regime that doesn't work. Almost everyone knows it doesn't work now. They're just having a hard time coming up with the alternative that we recommend.
Well, and the alternative, because we are going to get to that. Our guests, Dr. Michael Full and Joanna Rosato, their piece on Teacher Power and Education Week. The number is 844-967-2789. Solutions, system, culture, it's all here. Busted Pencils, fully leaded, back after the break.
Mino and the Mayor in the morning, and the talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Israel continues to strike Gaza in retaliation for Saturday's attacks on Israel. There's also fighting ongoing in Israel, where the Israeli military is trying to clear Hamas militants out of towns they occupied during Saturday's attack. ABC's James Longman has the latest from Tel Aviv.
Hostage situations are also ongoing inside Israel, but also inside Gaza. Hamas is claiming to have taken dozens of people hostage. Again, awful images showing young children, women, the elderly being transported on cars or on motorbikes over into Gaza. And so working out just how to respond for the Israelis now is a top priority.
President Biden at the White House reaffirmed U.S. support for Israel. At least 2,000 people are dead in Afghanistan after a major earthquake, and there was no winner in the Powerball jackpot. This is ABC News.
Here's to trekking through a kaleidoscope of fall color in Wisconsin. To being like, who's up for whitewater rafting? And turning stories into souvenirs. Here's to rich traditions made new again with good company. And seasonal flavors that taste even better when shared with friends. Here's to those who Wisconsin. Plan your fall getaway at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know what's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Oh, every Tuesday night, we always sell you something that everybody wants to be. That's an educated educator who talks education. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. 844-967-2789. Teacher Power, our guest, Dr. Michael Fullen, Joanna Rosato, Educators Amplified, System Change, Culture, Centering Teachers, That Work of Deep Learning. But, you know, the piece really to me, there's all kinds of places where the power is. But you talk about this, it's like that, you know, and Michael, we were talking about this during break, though. I've seen in your work, you do an interesting statistical site of going like, for every year students and stay in school, their level of engagement declines. Isn't that speaking then to how broken the system is and how bad the culture is?
Absolutely. I mean, it is. It's been that way for 50 years, and it's worsening.
Because
society is worsening.
Right. I can't imagine if they did it now. Like, it really, I'm in schools every day. And again, you know, I'll always like props the kids. They're beautiful. They're wonderful. But they are miserable in our schools. Just today, you know, and I can kind of like hear the sounds in the hallway now from my office. And I'm like, they just sound unhappy. Like you can hear sound, you know what I mean? And you know what, like a happy sound, you know what I mean? That buzz.
It's a different buzz.
It's a different buzz. And it's unhappiness.
Okay. And well, so,
I mean, I can't blame them much. I mean, I can't blame them much. They've spoken out time and time again in just the short, like we always move through iterations of students. And so we keep them moving. But just in the short span that the young people who are in the building that the buildings we're going into have been in there, they've seen an increase of their own safety at risk, increase of their teachers not being listened to or cared for, you know, an increase of the curriculum being increasingly more scripted and more harmful to the different identities and ideas and directions they want the world to be going. So in just that short span that they've been in, if we're thinking about a high school or a middle school and elementary school, the time that the young people are in that building, they've experienced a whole lot in a little bit of time to where they go into a place where they, I think it's behavior is a form of communication, right? Joanna, like we are always reading children's energy and behaviors in schools, and we're seeing that they're not happy. They're saying this is not okay. And by and large, they're damn right.
Yeah. So we have no choice but to
do something.
To do something. And that's where you guys put this forward. And you say there's an existential issue here, but there's hope, because changing the system to go after this, as you say, global challenge, this just that pivot into going, what if we centered our work on this issue of the well-being of society? And it sounds too simple, but did you mean it to be that simple, Michael?
Yes, in a direct way. Let's add another layer to this. Students who do well, they're because their families are pushing and all of that. One of the studies I read called them the wounded winners. They're not all that happy. They do well in the test scores.
Yep.
And they get jobs, but they're not happy in life. So, And the solution is it's obvious to say this, it's harder to do, but if you want to solve a social problem, you have to involve the people who have the problem in the solution. We have to involve the students who have the problem of boredom and burnout and ill-being in the solution. And Joanna has done that in a microcosm of her work. And we have to do that as a norm.
So in that sense then too, so let's go back to you, the way of, so how do we get there? Is it, you know, is it the, you said not hierarchical, but I heard you though talking about, like, you know, if we talk about the structure of schools and how they're organized with teachers in individual classrooms, there's a kind of an isolation set up in this idea. If we want them to come out, work collaboratively into those different settings, what about, you know, I'm just going to throw this out there. What about the building, what we say is the building principle? Are they part of the hierarchy or are they part of the cultural change?
It depends where you go. They're sometimes one or the other. And if they're part of the hierarchy, they've got the bad role of imposing something that doesn't work. But if they're in Anaheim, where the 20 school principals are working on behalf of the community, they're fantastically effective, and they've reversed the kind of energy in that system from the hierarchy to the decentralization, and then pulled out the decentralization to learn from it. So it's reverse thinking, and people will slip into hierarchy because it looks like it. Okay, we do this, and we're addressing it. Nobody is getting anywhere by increasing the hierarchy. Nobody in education.
Well, and that's the part too, where you sit there and it's like, because pushing this and putting forward, you know, you'd say your six C's, you know, how do we instill compassion, character, citizenship, collaboration, communication, creativity, critical thinking? Well, yeah, it's like you can't impose that, because those are values that we practice, is the way I look at those. And so if we're going back to this piece, teachers and students, teachers and learners, teachers and kids, teachers and communities, centering those values, then it starts to emerge as this. And then I just want to throw the other part in there where you say students are grounded in the new triple E of the new triple E reality of equity, engagement, excellence. That's awesome. There's hope there. And Joanna, I see you smiling right there, because we say, like, she's always like, Tim, stop beating the problem up. Give me some hope.
Well, again, it's just a different philosophical foundation, but the philosophical foundation that is natural and intuitive to the students who arrive and the teachers who choose to be there. And so it's just building up a strength. It's mining the gold that already exists.
Okay, so one, just got to see, we got a question from somebody who's texting out there, though.
I love it.
Yeah, and I'm going to frame this, though, and maybe not exactly how they're saying this, but doesn't this cost money and resources to do the type of change we're doing that you guys are proposing? And in this current moment, doesn't it feel like actually we are actively not when I say we, but there's a movement to actively defund and de-resource schools. If that's a reality, how do we enact the kind of change that you two are trying to put forward when there's an active society defunding public schools?
Mm. Well, thank you for just mentioning it, because it is happening and that is real. And I like anyone who's listening to acknowledge it.
Okay.
I want to say that, and that is the case right now. There's a push to pull that money out and use it privately and otherwise. But the money has not been the problem over the last 50 years. There's been lots of money pouring in that. In California right now, the community schools movement is funded by the government $4.1 billion to cause this to happen. Money does not cause change. It's necessary, but not sufficient. It's culture that causes it. And we've been throwing this money after the wrong solutions to tighten the hierarchy with testing, et cetera. That's where the money's gone. In a futile way to change it, because the strategy doesn't work. So now, naturally, people are pulling back. By our article, we want to reverse that, but this time, let's do it right. Let's change the culture.
Well, and doing that then, too, there's to me, it sets in this motion of going, of course I want to fund that. Is that kind of the tactic you're saying right there, Joanna? You're like, oh my God, Tim, of course.
Well, or again, on the ground as a union leader, a negotiator, I'm like, it saves you money. When students are engaged, they're enrolling in your schools. When teachers are engaged, you're not paying the cost of turnover.
Mm. Whoa, wait, retaining teachers as a solution to the teacher exodus? Joanna, I swear you.
The very simplest level, I'm like, I think, and I know years ago when we created our model, it was actually less money than the traditional system because of the way that roles and services were integrated.
Well, I wonder if this is what you're saying, this example here is that it doesn't cost any money to give teachers and communities agency. Is that too simple?
Yeah, I think it's too simple, because if you give them agency and they don't have the culture, they won't actually work.
Okay.
So the money is always necessary but not sufficient. And throwing money at a problem has never worked. It's got to be how the money is used, how it makes people feel, how they want to have a hope, how they want to put additional energy into it, how they start getting results. All of those things have to happen for that expenditure to be credible in the minds of the public.
Johnny Lupinacci, what are your thoughts there on funding?
I was trying to be like a producer and look up a quote while we were doing this, because I'm not able, this quote popped into my mind and I'm not able to cite the direct source, but I work with a gentleman, David Garcia, and he always reminds us in our meetings that are very similar about this, how to involve school change and really think holistically about community and the ways that we lead in service of community and partnership. And he always reminds us that, commitment without currency is counterfeit. And I think that that's really true. Like, we do need the money, because you can't cut the funds and then say, we need you to do something different. You know that there's something different you need to do, but you're not able to get it done. So we need the monetary support. But I also really think when we come back to it, like, the way that we involve, and both, Michael and Joanna remind us of this in their piece and then here tonight, the way that we involve not only teachers, but teachers and their students in the solutions, in the possibilities, in the change. And then I'm by nature of the research and work I do, I mean, I'll throw around the A word, you know, like I'm highly influenced by anarchist philosophies. So I love when we're critiquing hierarchy, but we do need different roles in schools. Like I've been privileged enough to teach in schools where there were no principals and we, you know, we all thought we could do it, and we need really good leaders in roles that are non-authoritarian, but are organized and do different things. And so one of the things that really brings this up, and I'll end this show later with a story from a classroom today from some young people, and they sum it up. But not only do we have to involve them in the solutions, but the people who are in power, we'll say the hierarchical positions, the roles, have to own some of those problems with humility. They have to say, like, okay, so now we're really going to do some things different. So we're not just going to listen to why it's boring or why it's not engaging or why we're not happy in the learning spaces that we're in, why it's not working for teachers, and then say we'll do some change and do nothing. We have to own it that we've been doing this in a really abusive way for too long. And so it's gonna need to change. And that's a big piece. I think we involve and hear it, but don't always take ownership and responsibility for those actions.
Michael.
Yeah, I want to be a little more anarchistic about that. That's the word about that issue, yeah. Because I think it's with the people at the top, we've said now recently, we're going to leave them out as much as possible. We're going to intrigue them with the good work. They don't know what the good work is. They've been funding the wrong work for ages, and they're never going to change their mind because they're in a different part of the issue. So I want, and California is a good example. The top doesn't run it, but they've invested in it. And it's up to the bottom and the middle to show what can be done by working differently. And then I think we'll get the attention of the top and the respect that you're talking about. But you can't do it the other way. You can't say, we're going to get the respect and then we'll be all right. That will never happen.
Here.
But it's Busted Pencils, Joanna Rosado, Michael Fullan. The piece is in Education Week, Teacher Power. Michael, and we've got like 30 seconds. Where should people find you on the web?
I'm michaelfullan.ca.
Okay, Michael Fullan. And Joanna Rowe. And I just want to say, we worked this out. Everybody who's loving this conversation, we're going to have you two back for an extended podcast, right?
Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. This is we just started touching these topics. This is what we do every week here. Educated Educators Talking Education. It's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded. Dr. Michael Fullan, Joanna Rosado, thank you for busting pencils.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
More when we get back. pencils fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. We do want to talk about it. In fact, we still have time if you want to call 844-967-2789. First time, again, LA Tom, thank you for calling. We usually engage Tom a lot more, but with our guests tonight, we really had a lot to go on. And again, if you're just coming back and hearing this and going, we solidified, we just didn't get the time announced yet, but Dr. Michael Fullan and Joanna Rosato agreed to meet with Johnny and I at another time, and we're going to record that extended podcast where we can really dig deep into the stuff they're talking about: system, culture, change. How do we enact this? Because, hey, the fate of the world is here. Johnny,
not to be dramatic about it at all.
No, I was going to say, but what do you think about, I was going to use that.
I mean,
somebody who says, okay, you guys, look, it's arithmetic, it's literacy, it's not the end of the world. Can you stop it? You know, I mean
yeah. Well, like, how do you answer?
I can hear, you know, again, my neighbor going, really, guys? The fate of the world rests on teacher power and collaboration and a culture change and aren't we just talking about, you know, telling kids to, you know, get a little bit more motivated, do a little bit like the fate of the world? Come on, you guys, you're way out there.
I mean, it is. It's pretty extreme. It's a pretty extreme language. But if we boil it down, it's real. And I'm not a big fan of using that extreme language because it sort of hyperbolizes stuff that's actually not hyperbolic.
Right.
It's actually very real. Young people feel as though the future is incredibly uncertain, and they're not wrong. Okay. And so I don't want to make it sound, it sounds dramatic, and we're like, the fate of the world depends on this, because for so long that has been dismissed as sort of like hyperbole or like extreme thinking. But it is the reality. It is the weight that young people carry within them. Joanna today shared that she's in schools every day hearing the noises that are not representative of happiness, of children learning together and experiencing that in a joyful way. And like, all moments in school ought not to be pure joy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's difficult, there's hard work, there's sad times. You know, we're not looking for some sort of romanticized utopia out of this. But the reality is the future is uncertain, and young people are not oblivious to this. That adds a weight onto what is the purpose of having schools, of being in schools. What are we here learning and doing? Are we here in engaged, creative ways that bring complement to our life? Or are we here in ways to just experience more of being controlled and being asked to be compliant toward things that don't really? And I like that, you know, Michael shared this. He said there was a concept of these wounded winners. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Even when you're good at playing school, the outcome is sort of well known. You get to get into a good college, maybe. You get to, you know, work in a particular career that might not continue to be relevant or exist. And so we have to make school more relevant and meaningful. And young people are really calling for that in both their behavior and their words. I mean, they couldn't be more explicit about that other than to light themselves on fire like Buddhist monks. Well, I mean, and legitimately they are. I mean,
they are.
Rates are through the roof.
I'm just thinking about this. So, you know, we've got producer Anya.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, got to bring you in.
Resident
you,
voice of the youth.
Resident voice report? Of the youth.
Hi.
Okay, what did you think of Dr. Fullan and Joanna and everything here? What is the house on fire, according to the youth?
Oh my, not only the house is on fire so much that as soon as you said that, an image comes to mind. If you've seen the little dog sitting in the room with the whole room on fire and he's sitting there just sipping his coffee saying, this is fine, that's how we all feel. The house is on fire, the doors are locked, I'm finishing my coffee. Like, that's kind of this house on fire vibe. Yes, that the future is uncertain, that schools are uncertain, that the future, God, for kids who are in school, I'm out of, you know, formal school and college, and I'm like, oh my goodness, what is down the road for the kids who are still in proper education right now, unlike me? It's crazy.
So let me ask you this then. What about the premise of saying, but what if school actually was about solving the problem of the burning of the house on fire?
Yeah.
Is it that simple?
It is.
Wow.
I hate to sound so crass, but sometimes I hear these things, you know. It's similar when I was in education. We had a fantastic program, and I'm really glad we did it, but it was about social emotional learning. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to get a lot out of this. And when I did it, it was just kind of like telling boomer teachers, like, hey, please be nice to your students. They have feelings and they don't want to die.
Boom. Oh my gosh.
And I'm sitting there like, I'm doing that. Like, tell me more. And they're like, no, that's it. That's the whole thesis. And I'm like, oh no.
Johnny.
I mean, I couldn't appreciate, thank you, Anya, for the youth report, but for that sobering dose of reality. That is exactly how I feel when we're discussing a lot of those things too. And it's great to hear from your experience as well. It is that simple to me, Tim, is we talked about involving youth, but I just can't emphasize it enough. We've been for a long time collaborating with young people, with young learners, and involving them in the solution. What we have to do is not ask them to participate in the brainstorming of rewriting the future and then ignore all of the wise things they share and do the same shit over and over again.
Hey, it happens.
Yeah. So,
Yeah.
All right. So doing the same business over and over again. And it really, I don't know what to say. It grinds my gears. That's a boomer saying that I'll add into there. You know, it gets me overly protective of their energy, of their contribution to solutions, because we are several generations into radical young people saying we can be a very different world. We can have a very different community. And it is just continually squashed out time and time again. So I'm just inspired that it still exists. You know, the fire of resistance exists in youth that Joanna and Michael point towards. Teachers that collaborate with young energy like this, their students are teaching us how to be different in schools.
Oh, there it is. Busted pencils. Fully leaded. Check out the extended pod when we get back next time. See you next week, Busted Pencils.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils, or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
You can't impeach someone before they've committed an alleged crime. Even principled conservatives are going to look at that action and say, come on, what's going on?
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Dan Knodel, Republican of Germantown, said he was moving forward to uphold his quote-unquote constitutional duty, which is a joke.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
It's the Wild West of how students are using generative AI.
As educators, there's sort of six responses that we can have to these new tools. We could ignore it. Mm-hmm. We could ban it. We can try and outfox it. We can teach about it. We can actually teach it, or we can teach with it. I think the most exciting one, of course, is to teach with it.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm